Blog Talk Radio. People, of course. Thank you for listening to the Eastern Airlines Radio Show, where we come to you each Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Our hosts are Steve Thompson, Margaret Bars, Jan Uchkai, Chuck Albright, Howard Mucci, Jim Grabo, George Chen, Jim Hart, and me, Neil Holland, your producer. Not all are with us tonight. Jim Hart, we gave him the night off. He went to a reunion, and he's still trying to recover from it. Our phone number for tonight's show is area code 213-816-1611. That's 213-816-1611. And our toll-free number is area code 877-572-1861, and that'll put you in toll-free. Come on and join our show. Just click number one. If you do call in and you want to be on the show, click the number one on your keypad, and by golly, you're right with us. The show tonight, a short overview of our show tonight, is that all airlines have them, flight delays. It's now, it's how they work through the flight delays that remain in the minds of the delayed passengers. Tonight we consider several types of aircraft delays. There's weather, of course, which no airline can control. There's mechanical delays. Some airlines have dependence on contract maintenance. Even flight crew on-duty time, which is set by the company and the FAA, may cause delays. Let's see if you've ever experienced the type of delays discussed in tonight's radio show. But first, before we go to our program, let's listen to a beautiful Eastern Airlines commercial. Hey, Chuck, how about starting the show off tonight?
Thank you, Neil. No one enjoys spending extra time at the airport because flight delays have kept their plane grounded. But frequent flyers know to expect these occasional interruptions in their travel schedules. Canceled airline flights and delays can cause major headaches, but the decision is typically made out of a concern for the safety of passengers and the flight crew aboard the aircraft. Flights can be canceled due to weather, natural disasters, mechanical issues, said Ed Martell, a spokesman for American Airlines. In some cases, they can be caused by crew time issues. Martell says every area of the country experiences flight delays at some point. This year alone, we had snow events in Texas and Northeast, big storms in Chicago, New York, hurricanes in the Caribbean, and just last night, high wind conditions that forced diversions for aircraft bound to Los Angeles, Martell said. Every part of the country had times of the year when they were severely impacted by weather events. Martell says that some airports are more equipped to handle flight delays than others. Delays at slot control or limited operation airports such as O'Hare, LaGuardia, JFK, and Washington National can be more disruptive because flights can't easily be rescheduled, Martell says. Jan?
Each airline establishes their own policies for assisting delayed customers. Karen Bogue, a business law instructor at South University Online Programs, says flight delays lead to postponed boarding, flight cancellations, and planes loaded with passengers parked on the tarmac. Passengers have few options when stranded in a plane that is parked on the tarmac, boat says. These long delays create shortage of water, food, and fresh air, along with increased impatience of passengers. Due to increasing instances of delays on the tarmac and other airline customer service issues, Boak says the Department of Transportation, DOT, implemented regulations in April 2010 and revised them in August 2011 to reduce delays and provide more protection for consumers. As a result, most U.S. airlines are now prohibited from allowing a domestic flight to remain on the tarmac for more than 3 hours. Boak says the only exception to this rule is if the pilot determines there is a safety or security reason keeping the plane from returning to the gate, and the passengers are allowed to deplane, or if air traffic control advises the pilot that returning to the gate or another location to allow passengers to deplane would cause a considerable disruption to airport operations. Boak says regulations also require airlines to provide food and water to passengers after sitting on a plane for 2 hours without being able to deplane. Unless there are safety or security issues surrounding the incident, the airline must also provide functioning lavatories and medical attention to any passengers in need. Passengers must also be updated on the status of the delay once every 30 minutes when sitting aboard a plane parked on the tarmac. Jim?
There are no federal laws limiting the length of other types of flight delays, Bo says. Carriers are required to notify passengers of known delays, those longer than 30 minutes, and cancel airline flights within 30 minutes of becoming aware of the change in the status, she said. The status information must appear at the boarding gate for the flight, on the carrier's website, and on the phone reservation system, Bo says. The decision to delay a flight doesn't necessarily come from one source. Most delays involve either maintenance or other weather-related incidents, but also can be caused due to waiting for the plane for passengers arriving on connecting flights to land at the airport, says commercial airline pilot. Sometimes a perfectly good plane can be delayed if it is determined that other inbound flights with connecting passengers have been delayed and are waiting just a short time for them while allowing the flight might make the flight. Without affecting other connecting flights downstream, the commercial airline pilot says. Sounds difficult to judge, but it really is considered and evaluated. Steve?
The commercial airline pilot says he doesn't experience flight delays very often. Normally, things run rather smoothly, says the commercial airline pilot. I've had almost zero delays caused by the crew and very few caused by maintenance issues. He says most maintenance issues that arise are easily fixable, but if something major occurs, such as an engine change, structural damage, or unknown leaks, a different plane and crew is usually assigned to the flight. When delays do occur, after passengers have already boarded the plane, the commercial airline pilot says the captain is typically responsible for informing passengers of the change in status. In the case that I've experienced delays, all of my captains have explained the delay in the best terms that would clearly convey to the average passenger what is actually causing the delay, the commercial airline pilot says. When mechanical, without getting into engineering terms or FAA regulations, they will explain that a certain item needs replaced, checked, or inspected by maintenance before we can leave the gate, or if ATC or traffic control delay, they will explain that weather en route or at the destination has restricted our takeoff time to allow for a smooth arrival time. Margaret.
Bogue says airlines are not legally obligated to provide compensation to passengers on a domestic flight in the U.S. that's been delayed, but they are required to compensate passengers with reservations that have been bumped from the flight. Each airline establishes their own policy for assisting delayed customers, Bogue says, so you need to check the terms and conditions, contract of carriage, or similar information for the specific airline. Bogue says airlines are more likely to provide accommodations if they are responsible for the delay instead of a reason beyond their control, such as a weather event. Even if a passenger was bumped from an earlier flight due to a cancellation, Bogue says they're not guaranteed a seat on the next available flight. This depends upon the terms and conditions of the airline and the type of ticket purchased. For example, the DOT requires tickets to be refunded within 7 business days. However, that requirement only applies to refundable tickets, Bogue says. Regardless, Bogue says that most carriers do attempt to schedule passengers from canceled airline flights on the next plane headed to their destination if space is available. Sometimes the airline may check for available seats with another carrier and endorse the original ticket to that carrier, Bogue says. The passenger may also request a refund for a canceled flight. And actually, EAL host, I'd like to share what I think was a funny little story that happened to me on a flight back to Jacksonville, Florida, and I was in the Dallas airport coming back from Vegas last September. In fact, it was American Airlines, and we had boarded the plane, and then we were notified that it was overloaded, so they deplaned all of us. And while we went back into the waiting area, the gate agent came on the microphone and he said, "Ladies and gentlemen, there is a maintenance," and that's exactly how he pronounced it, "there is a maintenance problem. The pilot is in disagreement with maintenance." So we thought that was odd. About 5 minutes later, the gate agent came back on and he said, "Maintenance has fixed a small problem, but the pilot refuses to fly the plane." So we were like, "What?" Then about 30 minutes later, he said, "Maintenance has reported that the new part has malfunctioned and the pilot has now left the airport." And we're like, "You've got to be kidding us." And then he said, "But we will be handing out $10 vouchers for food and drink, and we have another plane waiting to take you on your departure. Oh, by the way, that plane is leaving in 15 minutes. Has anyone else ever had that kind of situation?
Oh, man.
No, haven't.
It'd be hard to fly a plane without a pilot.
Well, you know, the whole thing was they kept minimizing, you know, the problem, and yet each time he would say it was a small problem, then he would say the pilot's refusing to fly, and now the pilot's left the airport.
Well, the small problem was the guy says small problem, the pilot says it's a big problem.
That's right. All right, Steve. I'm sorry, George.
George, go ahead.
I have a short story to tell, which I think it's not as immediate as yours, but I was on a flight. I don't know how many of you remember the blizzard of 78. I was flying a trip from LaGuardia that went from LaGuardia to Montreal, and then we were supposed to go back to LaGuardia and then to New Orleans for a layover, and at the time we stayed at the Royal Sonesta Hotel. And I was the first officer flying with Jimmy Smith. The late Jimmy Smith was a captain based here in New York. He was really a very, very nice guy. So it had just begun snowing when we left New York. We flew to Montreal, and when we got to Montreal, they told us, well, they're having a blizzard in New York, so we would like you to overfly LaGuardia and go directly to New Orleans and go to the hotel, which was a Royal Sonesta right on Bourbon Street, and stay there, and we'll call you when we need you again. So we did that, and we couldn't even, it just happened to be during Mardi Gras, and we couldn't get within five blocks of the hotel, so the limousine dropped us off. We walked to the hotel, and we all got the keys to our room. So after a few minutes, I went back to the desk, and I said, listen, being that it was, I mean, you know, it was Mardi Gras. So I went to the hotel clerk, and I said, look, you know, I'm Captain Smith with Eastern Airlines, and I'm really not feeling well, so don't put any calls through to my room. He said, okay. He said, I hope you feel better.
I can see this now.
The second officer and I, we went out partying for like 2 days, and finally, at the end of 2 days, somebody slipped the paper under Jimmy Smith's door and said, if you're feeling well enough, crew schedule would like you to call them. So he did, and they said, well, where have you been? We've been trying to get you for a day and a half. And they told us that you weren't feeling well. And he said, what do you mean? I never told anybody that. So we flew another trip back to New York that afternoon. It was a good thing because the flight engineer and I were both out of money at that point. And so all the way back, Jimmy kept saying, did any of you tell the clerk not to call the room? He said, no, would we do that to you? And I flew with Jimmy about 2 years after that, and I finally fessed up to him. He said, I knew it. So anyway, that was I don't know if the passengers were delayed or not, but we were certainly delayed, but we had a good time.
That was great.
You know, we've got to do a show on New Orleans layovers, that's for sure.
Oh, that is for sure.
Yeah. Steve, how about continuing on here?
All right. Ensuring a bustling aviation hub runs like clockwork is a challenging endeavor in the best of times. Doing so under blizzard or thick snow, ice, or freezing fog can only intensify the battle against the clock. Faced with these winter extremities for almost half the year, Oslo Airport has recruited a secret weapon to help meet its scheduling commitments, which is the TV-2000 snowblower. It weighs in at a mammoth 40 tons and has a price tag of just under $2 million. The giant snowplow can clear a 3-kilometer runway in as little as 15 minutes.
Wow.
The TV-2000 can remove about 10,000 tons of snow an hour, said the airport's head of services, Henning Breitbeck. It pushes the snow with a plow, and it sweeps the runway and blows the snow to the side in one operation. An array of smaller vehicles finish the job. There are only 4 such devices in the world, he added, and the Oslo airport has snapped up 2 of them. We need to be able to handle winter operations here more or less like summer operations. Employing such advanced weather management systems makes sense for an airport situated just a few hundred miles from the Arctic Circle. winter stretches between October and April in Norway, with snow falling regularly during this period. According to the Oslo Airport CEO, Nick Nielsen, this has pushed Oslo to become a leader in airport snow maintenance. We have winter 6 months a year, and we need to be able to handle winter operations more or less like summer operations, Nielsen said. That requires good planning. It requires a lot of resources, good procedures, and a lot of training. If not, we will more or less be out of business, he added. Chuck.
Yeah, the TV 2000 is a key weapon in the fight to keep flights on time. But Nielsen intimates that there's a host of snow-clearing devices and techniques employed at the Oslo Airport. This includes a rigorous de-icing process for aircraft and runways, as well as a fleet of giant plows that follow the TV 2000 to clear the snowblower off runways. An extra 90 people, meanwhile, are hired by the airport just to assist with the snow clearing during the winter months. The idea of this TV 2000 basically gets the grunt work done, Brechtmeister says, explains, and it always has 27 guys ready in case the snow starts falling. As soon as the first flakes fall down, we'll drive out and begin the snow clearing, he added. The effectiveness and the military-like precisions of this process becomes fully clear when compared to winter performances at other European airports. Jan?
Few sites are exposed to the elements with such regularity, yet almost all find it hard to compete with Oslo's record on punctuality. Around 40% of flights were canceled at Paris Charles de Gaulle and Orly airports on just one day in January this year. Frankfurt, meanwhile, was forced to close operations, leading to the cancellation of some 500 flights in the process. By comparison, Oslo has only ever had to cease operations because of heavy snow twice since opening its door in 1998. On both occasions, operations were up and running again after a matter of hours. Although Oslo Airport is considerably smaller than those in London, Paris, and Frankfurt, I think it's fair to say that after 14 years, we are in the position where we have a very solid and very good operation, said Nielsen. We are well prepared, know how to handle the situation, and we also have a policy of standardizing the fleet of vehicles, so maintenance and renewal is much more easy. But we know that one winter will always play different from the previous ones, so we will always learn something new, he added.
You know, Pittsburgh, as I recall, was one of the first airports that Eastern served that had the area that did the glycol of aircraft before takeoff and getting the wings cleared so that snow may not form on takeoff or early regime of flight. And it was pretty neat. I'm sure most of us, Jim Graybill and Steve Thompson, you've gotten line and probably had sprayed at some time in that pit. But that glycol is recycled, so they have the benefit of using it again. You guys recall that?
Yeah, I do. This is Steve. I remember that very well.
Yeah, that Jim Graybill, I've gone through that several times.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. I guess by now, of course, this was years ago, I think in the early 80s, late 70s, that they installed that. And
I used that. I saw it for the first time when I went with U.S. Airways, and I couldn't believe how efficient they actually were with it. And as you mentioned, Neil, they recycled the glycol, which was great, you know.
Yeah, and I had the experience of trying to start an airline up in Pittsburgh, and I was the Vice President of Flight Operations, and they gave us quite a tour of the entire facility there in Pittsburgh. And I got it from the management side of trying to start an airline as opposed to the pilot flying in and out of Pittsburgh. But I was very impressed with that. I'm sure probably most airports now have that type of going through the spray line there.
I hope that was on the other end of it, doing it the other way.
Yeah. Well,
regarding glycol, is there a period of time, I guess you guys are probably the best that would know, once you do the glycol, is there a delay, some type of timeline that you can take off? Or
well, we have two check captains with us, Steve Thompson and Jim Grayville. So can either one of you answer that question?
Yeah, Jim Grayville. Yeah, we had time limits on that. I don't remember exactly what they were this another century ago, but it was very strict time limits on it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's what was so good about Pittsburgh. It was right at the end of the runway, and the moniker for it was the car wash. And
yeah.
You would go through the car wash, and then you were next in line for takeoff, so you never exceeded the time limits where you had to go back and redo it.
Being a great aviation author, could you describe to our listeners that car wash for us, George?
Yeah, what it was at US Air, and I don't remember if the city ran it or the airport management ran it or if US Air ran it, but there were probably two or three glycol machines that did the entire aircraft in approximately 5 minutes. And you would just pull into a certain spot, and they would have one machine on either side of the aircraft and one at the tail, and they would do the tops of the wings. They would do the tail section of the aircraft. And then if they determined that the nose needed it, they'd also give that a shot. But it was very quick, and it was very efficient. Because that was U.S. Air's main hub was Pittsburgh at the time.
Yeah.
As I remember, that was located at the on the end of 28 left. Is that my memory serving me correct or not?
Yes, it was at the end of both 28 left and 28 right, depending upon whatever the departure runway was.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's move on with our flight delays. We've got a special guest posted with us today for someone who is an aircraft dispatcher for a major U.S. airline. This person wrote after an interview with Kate Haney with an enlightening piece on lengthy ground delays that would be of interest to everyone here listening tonight. And here is his take on things. Jim, would you start us off?
If folks want to want a schematic big picture view of why the new 3-hour limit is such a bad idea, they need to go further than an airline central dispatch office or any traffic control facility and chat with the actual working dispatcher and air traffic controller, respectively, who are the frontline troops in the annual weather war. Dispatch is an airline's mission control, so to speak. I have worked in one as dispatcher for up to 30 years. A flight crew might operate 3 to 5 flights per day, but the average dispatcher works 10 times that amount of flight in a single shift and has a more detailed awareness and understanding of the various problems areas within the airline's route system. The dispatcher is also one that plans the flight, including the routes, the alternatives, and the fuel load, and is also the one that passes along update information to the crew while en route. When weather hits, we're also the ones that divert flights and sometimes, if need be, we can cancel them. There are also two separate and distant problems with delays, Mr. Hemps, and his band of followers don't seem to be able to discern between the critical differences between them. In the last decade or so, there have been a handful of scenarios that produce 7+ hours delays, including, of course, the thunderstorm that causes Mr. American flights to divert to Austin. Admittedly, all the above situations were intolerable and handled poorly. And these are the apples when it comes to the issue of ground delays. See?
Yeah, with respect to the delay Ms. Haney suffered, I captured an image of the radar that night, and there was a big low-pressure system anchored over West Texas, resulting in a lengthy line of thunderstorms oriented north to south in central Texas. I'm sure Ms. Haney and her ilk probably think a thunderstorm is a thunderstorm, but there are many variables associated with them that vary the net operational impact, such as coverage, isolated, scattered, broken, solid line, movement, trend, tops, which would permit aircraft to fly over them or not, and the potential for the weather to train over the same location on the ground. The cells in that line of thunderstorms in Texas the night of Ms. Haney's flight moved south to north, and kept DFW in the weather much longer than had this been the more typical line of thunderstorm one sees with an approaching cold front, which quickly moves west to east or northwest to southeast. And I've already mentioned the rare apples of the ground delay issues. The oranges are much more common 2 to 4 hour delays one sees when thunderstorms impact major airports or regions, especially on the East Coast. Ms. Haney's solution to the apples problem is not going to solve the oranges problem, yet I think the majority of Ms. Haney's success with her movement has been the ability to tap into the general public's mistaken notice that all the delays are equally evil no matter how short the duration, that every operational situation is predictable with the airline with 100% accuracy, and that any time anything goes wrong, it's the automatic fault of the airline. Well, now there is no one-size-fits-all solution here. Let's look at some common sense tests, assumptions and misassumptions, and observations. Well, the general public can relate to the fact that their cross-country car trip will take one times in good weather, and on dry roads, two times if it's raining, and maybe three times if there is snow or ice. It is such a stretch to conclude that aircraft are similarly slowed down in such conditions. Now, does it make sense that airlines enjoy delays or perhaps are just forced to tolerate them? Since the last time I looked, the airlines have no control over the weather. Nobody at an airline likes delays, but we realize that a good many of them are the unfortunate cost of doing business within the current air traffic control system. The oranges, not the apples. Likewise, does it make sense that airlines have the ability at 11:07 a.m. to predict with absolute certainty that a thunderstorm or fog or whatever will impact XYZ Airport at 5:23 p.m. or 6:03 p.m. or 7:16 p.m.? Once bad weather starts occurring, it will end at 1:23 from now, or 2:10 from now, or 3:33 from now. The concept of airspace capacity constraints is a foreign one to the general public, as they look up at all that sky and assume, incorrectly, that it has unlimited capacity, all that open sky, and there's no room for one more flight. Again, that's an individual flight perspective, and one that ignores systemic issues. As far as returning to the gate and just getting some portable stairs and buses go, where can airlines and airports find the magic wands needed to conjure up these extra resources and additional gates? when needed on a short notice. Should every airport have double the number of gates normally used just in case problems occur? Should Phoenix have the same number of snow plows that Anchorage does? What's reasonable for an airport to have? Airport capacity is a variable commodity and not a constant one. Look at San Francisco Airport Acceptance Rate, AAR chart, for example. Notice that the airport acceptance rate per hour figure can vary greatly depending upon what runways are or not in use. AAR is the supply, and the flights that the airlines and non-airlines fly into the airport are the demand. When demand is less than supply, things are good. But when the weather, such as surface clouds, surface winds, cloud ceilings, visibilities change, often suddenly and despite forecast, and drive a change in the runways in use that involve a drop in the AAR, demand then exceeds supply and delays ensue. Some flights in the air will need to circle and may even have to divert. Some flights that haven't departed still at the gate or on the taxiway awaiting departure will be delayed. Think metered freeway on ramp here. Chuck.
A thunderstorm event precludes aircraft from landing at XYZ Airport for 2 hours, and XYZ normally handles 50 flights per hour. That's 100 flights that not are going to be affected. They don't just all disappear. Some of them will be able to hold and get in. Others will hold and divert to alternatives. Of these flights diverting, some will cancel. Some will refuel and try to go back to XYZ. Once the weather improves at XYZ, ATC will be working at backlog of traffic. Things don't immediately snap back to normal once the weather clears out. If airline schedules are restricted such to always be able to fall within an airport worst case AAR, you'll be solving a problem that may occur 20% of the time, and not necessarily restricting things during 80% of the time when it's not warranted. If we say it's foggy at XYZ and you tell the customer service agent the weather is okay at Aunt Tilly's house nearby, that's nice. But it's only relevant if you're shooting approaches to Aunt Tilly's house, landing in her driveway. It's the weather at the airport that counts. You'll be surprised at how often this comes up. One hears a great deal about the next-gen ATC stuff. While it will help in some operational contexts, it won't in many others, such as runway capacity. Also, if one is trying to get from LaGuardia to O'Hare and there's a solid line of thunderstorms from Toronto to Atlanta topping 50,000 feet, it matters not whether the flight is navigating use VOR, GPS, Boy Scout compass, or taxiing on the Interstate 80. You're not going to get through the weather, and there's going to be delays. Keep in mind that the airline employees are not interchangeable. Customer service agents don't have detailed knowledge of specific ATC delays, only that there is an ATC delay. Likewise, many pilots only have their viewpoint of their specific flight, not much awareness of any systematic issues. It's no different than walking into a hospital and unreasonable to expect detailed surgical questions to be answered by anyone other than a surgeon. The administration clerk won't do it, and it's unreasonable to expect a clerk to be trained to answer surgical questions. Jan?
In closing, our guest post states, I'll reiterate that nothing that I've written should be construed as acceptance of the delay that Ms. Haney and others experienced in that handful of really lengthy delay situations. Irrespective of however well-meaning her efforts might have been, her pushing of a one-size-fits-all solution is going to end up being severely counterproductive. By DOT's new 3-hour rule and the huge fines that the airlines are now facing, it is the height of financial irresponsibility, if not insanity, for any airline to risk allowing each aircraft that busts the three-hour limit to incur $1 million fine. Preemptive cancellations will occur earlier than the three-hour mark, so as to ensure aircraft can get through any taxiway gridlock and get back to the gate before the bell does ding at 3 hours. The question will be, will your airport have fewer flights in the future? Last month, I pointed out a growing trend in the U.S. airline industry towards upgauging, replacing smaller planes with larger ones. Virtually every airline has become synonymous with the potential cost benefits of switching to larger aircraft. They are almost always more fuel efficient and more labor efficient since they allow the airlines to spread costs over more potential passengers. From a passenger perspective, the upgauging trend could lead to lower ticket prices if the airlines pass most of all their cost savings through to customers. This would obviously be a nice benefit for consumers. However, as the average plane size increases, airlines are likely to maintain capacity discipline by cutting back on the number of flights they offer. Small, medium cities are likely to bear the brunt of this industry's change, as airlines may offer fewer flights on larger planes rather than more frequent service on smaller aircraft. Consumers will be much less pleased with this change. Margaret?
Unintended consequences? As I detailed last month, virtually every major U.S. airline is participating in the upgauging trend. Some, like JetBlue Airways, are expanding their fleets with larger aircraft than they've previously flown. Others, including Alaska, are retrofitting existing planes to fit more seats on board. Southwest Airlines is doing both of these things. Others, like Delta Airlines, are buying larger planes to replace smaller ones that are being removed from service. However, airlines will not be happy if they find that they need to drop ticket prices in order to fill their larger planes. This would jeopardize the return on investment for these aircraft. Capacity discipline has become a universal talking point for airline executives, and the industry as a whole has been fairly diligent about matching capacity to demand for the last several years. There is only one way for airlines to keep overall capacity in check while the number of seats on each plane grows. They will need to cut down on the number of flights offered. While this would offer customers less choice, airlines will be drawn to this option by the need to limit capacity growth. An example would be this. Memphis is a city that's already been hit hard by this logic. When Delta and Northwest merged 5 years ago, the two offered a combined 238 daily departures from the Memphis hub. Today, that's been cut to just 94 daily departures. While Southwest recently announced plans to enter the Memphis market later this year with flights to 5 destinations, that's a small consolation for Memphis residents. At an investor conference last fall, Glenn Hohnstein, Delta's executive vice president for network planning and revenue management, explained the logic of downsizing in Memphis. Instead of running small regional jet flights from a city like Birmingham to both Memphis and Atlanta, Delta will in the future direct all of its traffic to the big Atlanta hub using larger planes. Offering fewer flights on larger planes is more cost-efficient for Delta. As far as the industry shakeup, as airline fleets converge towards larger planes, small cities will continue to see a reduction in flight options. Among the network carriers, smaller hub cities like Memphis, Cincinnati, and Cleveland are likely to see the biggest cutbacks. Low-cost carriers may reduce frequencies for lower traffic routes while fitting more passengers on each flight. On the other hand, if you live in a large metropolitan area with a busy airline hub, such as New York, Chicago, Dallas, or Atlanta, you may see bigger flight options in the future. As capacity becomes more concentrated in the bigger markets, airlines will offer more flights on larger planes in those cities. This trend could lead to somewhat lower prices and perhaps more available itineraries. Jan?
Great transformation. The upgauging trend will take years to fully unfold, as airlines tend to replace only a small proportion of their fleets each year. However, by the end of the decade, today's small hubs may have disappeared, but large hubs will be even larger while accommodating larger planes on an average. This shift will have the greatest effect on small-town America. Small cities, which today have flights to several different hub airports, will not be able to support as many flights on larger aircraft. Customers are therefore likely to have fewer choices in the future, with flights to just two or three big hubs becoming the norm. Unfortunately, this reduction in consumer choice may be the price of having a profitable airline industry.
Now, that's our program for tonight. However, let's see if we have some comments from our host. First of all, I'd like to say that the airline industry, as far as dispatching aircraft and delays in aircraft movement, you know, it is so complicated, it seems to me, after listening to our program tonight, that, golly, it's almost like what I would conceive the complications of a neurosurgeon or a brain surgeon doing a brain operation, because there are so many factors involved in aircraft delays, so many factors. We didn't even mention, too much tonight about crew time limitations. Crew time limitations are caused by the FAA requirements of not being on duty for hours or flying so many hours. And also the company has policies that may be even more strict than the FAA's. So there are so many complications in delays of aircraft that are involved. So many different things that go into the reason why airplanes are late. Any comments from our host?
Well, the dispatchers have such a heavy burden in airline operation. Now, they're very busy as it is when the operation is normal without any delays. But when you put in some adverse weather that affects an operation, or even mechanical that affects an airplane, an individual airplane, then their job is more than doubled in its intensity. So they have a tremendous job in keeping the airline going under these conditions.
I'd like to mention also, Steve, that aircraft dispatchers are licensed, or not licensed, certificated by the FAA. And they have to actually know pretty much all of the knowledge, the ground knowledge of the operational knowledge of an airline captain. Because their exam is pretty much based on what the exam would be for an airline captain. So these people are very knowledgeable about the aircraft that they are operating or dispatching, and they have the decision to make as far as the aircraft alternates. However, the captain in flight can change the information that the dispatcher says, okay, we're going to go to this, we're going to use this airport as an alternate, and then the captain knows some information that says, no, that's not what we're going to do this. And so there are so many things that the mechanical even mechanical write-ups on the airplane, continuous operating items might affect the flight of the aircraft. So there are so many things that the aircraft dispatcher has to have knowledge of. Comments?
From the customer.
Let me bring up something nobody's talked about.
Okay, Chuck.
Being a maintenance manager, you come into the play of having your shift have on-time departures. And, of course, delays are put into that. And I think a lot of the management personnel at a lot of the airlines want to see a glowing report at the end of the month. And they're more likely to push the plane, I think, and get them out there on the tarmac as opposed to leaving with the gate. Like we've stated here, how many gates do you have spare that you can keep the incoming airplanes diverted to as opposed to the ones sitting on the gate? And that's one of the variables that we didn't talk about tonight, about the on-time performances of the individuals that are involved with seeing that that airline has good performance statistics at the end of the month, because that goes out on a nationwide report. Any comment about that?
I envision that the airports are going to have to change their method of operation in order to accommodate the customers who are, in fact, delayed. This is a consumer time of not only year, but actually the 21st century. And I envision that something is going to come of this where delays, instead of hopping on a tram to go downtown and sightsee in the city that you're stuck in for a period of time and not, you know, divert yourself and not think about where your final destination might be, I think that the local airport authority is going to have to provide some type of accommodation for the customers, because the overload of people at the airports today, if you ever experienced a delay, is very uncomfortable. People are sitting on floors, laying on floors, and I just see a whole different ball game.
I don't know what the cost is going to be on something like that, Margaret, but that I totally agree with you. That laying on the floor at the airport for 2 or 3 days, I would think the traveling public would get an uproar over that one.
Hey,
yeah,
you guys, they can always go to the airway that Washington National used to have. I used to really enjoy that. You guys remember that?
Yeah, I remember that.
What a novel idea. And I don't know why they don't have them around anymore.
Why don't the airports have movie theaters?
Well, Margaret is asking the question,
what
is airweight? I'm busy chewing an olive.
I just wanted to ask what that was. Could someone tell me about that?
Go ahead,
Steve. Tell me about
I will if someone else wants.
Yeah, go ahead. I remember it as being a room put into a closet that had a bed in it and maybe a sink. That was about the size of the room.
Well, picture a mobile home on a foundation that looks like a pedestal, I guess, mounted so that the mobile home is on top of this walkway or elevator that goes up, and you might have two rooms or maybe four rooms in that mobile home, and they're all sectioned off so that there is a little bed, television you can only see if you're laying down looking up, and a small bathroom that actually the commode folds, and you've got a shower and all of that for about, I don't know, maybe $10 for an hour. Do you remember
that? Do they have something like that on the West Coast?
Did they, Jan? I'm not sure.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, traveling over to Hawaii and stopping over in L.A. or San Fran, I don't recall which, if you missed your connection, you had an option of renting some kind of a cubicle, if you will, to sleep maybe a couple of hours. And it was, you know, less expensive than if you went to a hotel.
There you go.
And that was way back
they have in
the 70s
or
80s.
Yeah.
They have these wall-to-wall coffins.
A good way to describe it, Chuck.
They also have those in Atlanta now.
They do? George?
No, that wasn't me.
Who said that? Area code 770.
Sonny Smithwick. I'm in Atlanta. Delta has that in Atlanta now also. No, not Delta, but I mean the Atlanta airport has that now where you can rent a room right there on the concourse.
Is it pretty much as described?
It is. Just a small bed, and that's it. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, it's a pedestal mounted mobile home.
Yep, that's what it is.
Yeah. Pretty neat, I thought. And that was back in the 60s that I recall. Actually, the late 50s and early 60s, they came up with this idea. Pretty neat.
Can end up being like those rotary car stalls that you drive into and the Ferris wheel thing goes around and around. That's what's going to happen to the people. They're going to get into their little cubicle or coffin, and it's going to rotate up, and then the next one gets in and rotates up. And you'll have like 10,000 people in this big merry-go-round.
Very good. Yes, George?
It's George. I don't know if you're aware of it or not, but Bob Schipner passed away I guess it was last week.
Yeah.
Yeah, they came out on repo.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah, because he was the chief pilot for quite a few years.
Matter of fact, I talked to Bob about 3 months ago, 4 months ago maybe. He emailed me and said he enjoyed the radio show. And I said that, Bob, you would be a great interview, so would you consider that? And then he told me yes, but he was out of town at a hospital. So that's the first time I heard that he was having problems, and then I saw that he had passed away recently. So,
okay, I just didn't know if you were aware of it or not.
Yeah.
He was a classmate of mine.
Oh, was he? Okay. And he was a chief pilot where in Chicago, right?
He was assistant chief pilot toward the end there until Texas Air took over the airline. He was,
okay.
I think, for 2 or 3 years he was assistant chief pilot.
Okay. Okay.
He was VP of operations.
Okay. Later, at the last part of his time with Eastern, he was the vice president of flight operations.
And he also ran for ALPA president against O'Donnell 1 year, but he was defeated.
Okay. And Jim Graybill?
Yeah, I remember him down in Miami in the training department once, but he'd been in negotiations for the contract for ALPA.
Yeah. Well, that's about the end of our program discussion. I think, Margaret, you have an announcement to make about the clip wings?
Yes, as a matter of fact, the flight attendant reunion for the Clipped Wings is going to be held Sunday, May 19th at 11 a.m. at the Cross Creek Cafe on Cross Creek Parkway in Atlanta. And for further information, you should call Joey McGraw. And let me give you that phone number. That is area code 404-789-7828. Let me repeat that one more time. Area code 404-789-7828. And reservations are a must. I'm sure that's going to be a great event. And Neil, for those people who don't know who the Clipped Wings
are. Ask the question. See if our hosts know.
Yes. Do any of the hosts know who the Clipped Wings are?
No clue whatsoever. Who are they?
Well,
is it before before our time or after our time?
No. But I believe, now I stand to be corrected, of course, everything I say, I stand to be corrected. But I believe the clip wings got their name because you remember a time when flight attendants couldn't be married.
Oh, yeah.
So, therefore, their wings were clipped. Now, if any member of the Clip Wings Club would like to call us and give us a little history about the Clip Wings, we'd love to hear from you. Because I knew some that delayed their entry into the Clip Wing Club. Of course, we can talk about it now that we're married when they weren't supposed to be married because of the policy of Eastern Airlines.
I'd like to extend that invitation as well, Neil, because I think that's very fascinating that at a time in our history, particularly for women who were working, that they were not allowed to be married. So if any of the Clipped Wings flight attendants, former flight attendants, want to call in, we would really, really enjoy hearing from you.
We could do a show on that, Margaret.
We could. A whole show.
Neil, do you remember when they came out and said that flight attendants could be married? I remember on the shuttle standby in Washington. When that happened, I never saw so many wedding rings pop out in my life.
Very good.
Funny.
Oh, the stories that we have to share. And every Monday, 7 p.m., we want to share them with our listening audience around the world. And again, our group that listened to our show is well above 1,000 every Monday. And, of course, you can always catch our shows on the Internet by going to Blog Talk Radio. And you'll see all the archived shows that we have done in the past. 116 shows is about to be canned and archived.
Unbelievable.
In the Eastern Hangar of radio shows, because we're becoming to be known as the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. So I hear the bumper music now of Lawrence Welk, and that's what we use at the end of each show. And we hope you're with us every Monday at 7 p.m. for our shows that now reach over 40 countries around the world. And we're proud that our show is keeping the memory of Eastern alive. That's why we do them. And that it has become the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. We hope you're a part of all these voices that make these broadcasts still going for more than 2 years now. So from all of your hosts and listeners, we say
good night, Eastern.
Good night,
Eastern.
Good night, Eastern
good night.
Family.
Yeah, I think it does, and I've got to talk to Jim. I try. I don't know. It's the type of phone that he's using. And, yeah. Well, that's because I've been, every time that I see he doesn't have a part, I click it off.
Oh, I meant every so often, like,
it's their phone.
We have a host, you know, hear it.
Remember the gal that we had before? What's her name? I've already forgot her name. Spanish gal. And she had a bad echo, and Jim's got an echo. Yeah. Yeah, it was a good show tonight. Yeah. That's Chuck. I bet you a dollar it's Chuck.
All right, I'll go back to my office now.
Hello, Neil. Hello.
Yeah. Yeah, would you get it?
Yeah, it probably was, Chuck, yeah.
That was a good show, though. Yeah, I think so, too.
You know what I think we'll do in the next show, Margaret? Is talk about 116 broadcasts. Just talk about what we've done 116 shows. And yeah, I think it would be good. And just talk about, how we operate as the seven hosts that we have. Or, and just do it impromptu. Don't know.
Yeah, exactly. Show. And then what would be fun, you know how they do takeouts? Like when they're putting movies together and they do the takeout, the funny things that have happened.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
Yeah, and you know,
yeah, the bloopers. Yeah, that would be good.
And we could talk about some of the bloopers that we've done.
That would be great.
And then we can talk about
Howard falling out of his chair.
Like
one host fell out of his chair.
Out of his chair.
One had a heart attack during the show.
Yeah, and we thought he was drinking.
I think it would be great. I think it would be good.
You know, and then we can talk about how we get tickled in the studio and we have to turn our microphones off and we just fall out on the floor.
Who was that 770 guy that called in? Sonny somebody. Yeah, I wish I'd have taken it, but we didn't have much time left.
Think about
that's him. Hello, Neil. Hey, Jim Graybill. How you doing? Yeah, we talked about that before you came on, I think. We talked, maybe I talked to Chuck about it because he usually calls before the show and we chat a little bit. And we were talking about that 800, that it actually, I think the gross takeoff weight was less than a million. However, it demonstrated over a million. Yeah, it's. Yeah. What are they? They must be 60,000 pounds of thrust. Oh, my God. God, that's going to be separating the wing from the fuselage. Yeah. Hey, listen, one technical problem that we have, the phone that you're using, what type is it? What are you using? Okay, we're getting a feedback. And that's why you hear the echo. I don't know whether you heard it, but we hear it here. We hear an echo, and what I do is I have to mute your phone until it's time for your part. And then when you're talking on your phone, there is no echo. However, when I line up the phones, that the mics are all turned on, you are in echo mode. Yeah, that would be good. Margaret just said, "Tell you good night, her fellow Kentuckian." Yeah, okay. But anyhow, I think it was a good show. We've got some good shows next week. I think we've decided that what we're going to do is we're going to do a recap of all of our shows over the past 2 years and 3 months now. And we're not, I mean, we're just going to talk about bloopers that we've made. We've made a lot of bloopers. Of course, we're an amateur radio station. And we're going to tell the good and the bad, some of the good stories and some of the bad stories about, you know, doing this show. And it's going to be all ad-lib. And good, bad, and the ugly, yeah. But anyhow, I think it's a good show. It's very informative, and we break away from Eastern history because, you know, we can talk, over 100 shows. We've tried to talk a little bit about Eastern. And, yeah, we still don't have it all in. So, but anytime you think of a good show, like what you just mentioned here, we might be able to do that too. And or either bring it into our show. I'm just email me. Let me know. Okay. Well, we can do a test. We can do a test before the show because you can talk and I can have all the mics. What I have is every person that pops up on my board. They call it the board. And whether it's Rush Limbaugh show or whatever talk show, they have a board that they see each person that's online. And so I can open your mic or close your mic from the producer's panel here. And so what I do is when I open all the mics and everybody checks in, then I can check to see whether there's any echoes. And we've had some people that have had dogs. These are some of the bloopers that we want to talk about. Dogs in the background. And one night, I don't know whether you were on the show, we had one of our guys that whose stock market guy was apparently visiting in his home telling him stocks to buy. And we heard that in the background. We heard that in the background. So it's been a lot of fun. And, you know, this is kind of a fun show, so we're not paid for it. We're not paid professionals, but by golly, I like doing it. I really do. Yeah. Jim, shows like that are, I think, more interesting and fun to do than something that's scripted. I know Chuck has been wanting me to complete that flight that Hop Harrigan has made. And that wrecked airplane, and he wanted to know what happened, so he wants me to finish the sequel to it, but I'm not too anxious to do it. And but anyhow, okay, well, listen, thanks for letting me know about that 747. And by the way, I was going to mention tonight, and I didn't do it, but you saw that Airbus has got the Airbus A350. And the A350 is being test flown now. Yeah. And it's also, the A350 is Airbus's answer to the Boeing 777 and the Dreamliner. Yeah, it's a combination of the two. And from what I read in on Yahoo today, it's the Airbus A350. But it kind of is a wide body. It seats as many as the 7-7. And it has the luxury of the Dreamliner. Yeah. Well, remember the 787, I believe, is smaller than the 7-7. Oh. Tell me about it. I was looking at the internet today, and I was looking at cargo flights. So they were showing, not cargo. Well, yeah, I guess it was cargo. Crew accommodations. Did you see that on the internet? How the sleeping beds and all that. Yeah. No, I haven't seen anything. I think it's going to be a while before they find anything on that airplane. Yeah. Yeah. And I think we talked about it that pretty much describes what actually happened. So I think we were... I'm sure they're not going to ask us for our opinion. Okay, good. Good having you with us, Jim. Take care. Bye-bye.